Hello and welcome back to a panic edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. Marcus Thompson, the Warriors lost by 10 in Denver. Are you stunned by this development?
It's really hard for Warriors Twitter to grasp that this team is a middle of the pack Western Conference team that's going to win some games and they're going to lose some games. And they're especially going to lose games to good teams sometimes. It's like every game is like, oh, they're the greatest. Oh, they're the worst. Fire this guy. This guy's giving him some postseason award 10 games in. Like the emotional roller coaster of Warriors Twitter is going to exhaust you. Take it easy, Warriors fans. We're in a pandemic.
A roller coaster to 36-36. That's what it feels like we're heading towards, right? They're 6-6 right now. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, college football fans in a sense of good programs. You know, like I've obviously went to school out in Oklahoma, and like Oklahoma fans have become so used to this stand. OU has become so used to this standard of like they're 11-1 every year, they're 10-2 every year, that like the losses, you know, even if the team isn't that this year, because the Warriors fans, to me, it's similar, have become so accustomed to being good. And they kind of gave up, you know, last year was last year, but now they almost expect, like, look, this has to be, you know, a title-type team. And the reality is this season was lost in that realm the moment Klay Thompson tore his Achilles. I mean, like, if you have a max player on the contract on your books that's going to play 0 minutes – like, how good can you even possibly be in the NBA?
To me, that's just what I think the part that's being missed. Like, it's like, oh, this was a winnable game. Yeah, there are a lot of winnable games in the NBA, right? Like, that's what separates the good teams from the great ones. I mean, the Warriors were close in games when they had Kevin Durant in them. And then at the end, they do what they do. But the Warriors did not rebound just because they decided not to rebound. Or they didn't turn it over just because they decided to turn it over 19 times, right? I mean, missed layups, yeah, they probably should handle that. But generally speaking, the failures of the team that lose are prompted by the success of the team that wins. It's not like out of nowhere. So I don't think it was a terrible performance. They lost by 10. They were in it. Could they play better? Absolutely. Could they beat Denver on a given night? Sure. But this is part of what being a 6-10 seed, this is what it's like. This is what it is. And as Steph said, hey, they're 12 games in. Give them time. If they're doing this in March, tricking off layups and game, like, all right, go, you know, go off. But it's just a little early. I just don't think it was that bad of a performance. There were some bad performances inside of it. But if you got a chance to win an NBA game against a team that's really good, you kind of did your job. And this is the game that people were just wishing they could have when the Warriors were getting blitzed by 30 to open the season. It's like, man, can you at least lose by 10 and make it close?
If you put this game on Christmas against the Bucks, fans probably would have come out like, hey, that was better than the opener. You know, it looked better. I agree with you, and we're about to get to the critiques of this specific game. And I do think there's some Kerr stuff we can get to. Draymond's night we can get to. When it becomes like wider scope, like views of where the franchise is and indictments on, you know, I'm not even talking legacy, but just like where this franchise is, that is where it gets overblown through 12 games. But if we're just talking tonight, we've had plenty of discussion about the starting lineup, and the starting lineup has been their worst unit this season. It was fine tonight. They played 19 minutes. They were minus one. I think it was 44-43. To me, they lost this game, and I wrote about it. They lost this game at the end of the first quarter and the end of the third quarter when he played Pascal and Looney together for 4 minutes.
With Bazemore, right? Was that the Bazemore lineup?
Yeah. In these four-minute blocks, and they were a cumulative minus 17 in those 8 minutes in a 10-point loss. And I don't get playing Pascal and Looney together. To me, Pascal on this team, they've discovered, is a center. And they have three centers, and they don't have to play all three centers. They can, but to me, if Looney's on the court, Wiseman's not on the court, right? You would never put Wiseman and Looney on the court together. Pascal's now in that group. You're either with Wiseman on the floor. If you want, it can be Looney, or it's Pascal small ball. I would probably say he should go Wiseman and Pascal small ball, and then Looney is break in case of a Wiseman emergency, essentially. But, you know, they played those two together, and it's such a crunch court, right? Eric Pascal, we've discovered, needs space to to go after slow-footed centers.
Yeah.
But when he's out there with Looney, the center's going to guard Looney, and Looney's going to clog the lane with that center. And then suddenly you've taken away what you've discovered he does so well against second units. And that to me was the Kerr mistake tonight. It wasn't the starting lineup. And that's where they lost the game.
But it was a very Steve Kerr mistake, right? He's like, somebody's got to guard Jokic. And then who's going to be our rebounder to deal with their four? I don't know if I'm not sure if Millsap was in the game, but I know they brought in Hartenstein, who's a pretty big dude. And, you know, I just think sometimes Steve is just like, all right, we need somebody to guard this guy. We need somebody to rebound with this guy. You know, we need somebody who can, like, he's thinking defense, he's thinking rebounding before he's thinking, can we spread the four?
Looney's like his safety valve.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of times. Especially on this team, right, where it's like, well, they don't really know how to play Warrior style. Well, Looney is the smart, wily veteran who is the third longest tenured, you know, rotation player. And, I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure Looney should be in the rotation right now. Wiseman gets 26 minutes tonight. We can get to him. He had his best game in, I think, a few games. And then you could just play Pascal small ball center the rest of those minutes.
And really, whatever few minutes you have after that, just give him to Draymond, small ball center, right?
Yeah.
You know why I think that lineup you pointed out is so important? It's because we're seeing this trend of opponents taking their starters out at that, like, 4 minute mark. And then bringing them back at like the 8 minute mark, 10 minute mark of the second quarter. So really, like, that's the window where you got Steph against the second unit. And it's a much shorter unit than the Warriors second unit has before the other starters come back in. They're getting a good 2 to 4 minutes playing against the starters because they're still on the floor while the other team brings their starters back. So that final 4 minutes, you're going against the opponent's reserves with Steph, and you have to win those moments. The Warriors have to win that moment. If they're going to pull Jokic, if they're going to pull Murray, if the Clippers are going to pull Kawhi and Paul George, right? If these teams are going to take their best players out, sit them at the end of the first and third quarters, and Steph's still on the court, you got to win those moments. And that's why, like, it was just weird that Damian Lee wasn't with them. It was just like, yes. Huh? I'm like, what?
If Damian Lee is in for Looney right there, like, I understand that rebounding might be an issue, but rebounding's already in it. They're the worst rebounding team in the league, by the way, right now. They're grabbing only 47% of rebounds.
I don't understand why he's always trying to go big knowing that. Like, these dudes are not rebounding. Like, that's, you might as well go small. Like, I could see if they were rebounders, but they're just not rebounders.
We should also probably have a Kevon Looney discussion. Like, look, he was awesome for them in the playoff, and really,
where's Ethan? We can rip about the Looney Renaissance.
I mean, we were talking a little bit about it offline tonight, but like, he makes some sense in certain matchups. Like, if James Harden's out there and he's like playing some switching defense, just because he's number one smart, and two, he's not athletic, so he's not jumpy at all. He can kind of contain guards better than.
He absorbs the body when they drive into him. He knows how to just like maintain his balance and stay there. It's a very specific skill set.
Yeah. And, you know, he can find Curry better than Pascal or Wiseman can from the center spot, you know, just because he's played within that Curry ecosystem more. But the reality is where he's at physically, which it's not as bad as last year, but he's not as good as he was 2 seasons ago, I don't think. He doesn't really fit what this team needs right now, unless it's Wiseman's in quick foul trouble and you need a center. Okay, go to him. But don't go to him with, I don't think, in a Pascal lineup. That doesn't, I don't really see it.
I could see him as that backup center who comes in when Wiseman sits in the first quarter. But, I mean, like you said, Pascal is looking pretty good. Steve is starting to use Pascal with Steph. And that's kind of a prime moment. So, Like, I'm with you. Looney, for me, is just a very specific player. He's really good at certain things, and those things are very valuable in a playoff series when you have time to milk matchups. I don't know how good he is.
And you know what else? When you have, when he's the center for a lineup that has Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, you got to remember where Looney has thrived in his career and what team he thrived on. Like, when you need more juice, when you need more spacing, you know he is now. He missed a three tonight, a wide open wing three. He's now 6 of 43 in his career from three. I mean,
he take him though. He ain't shy. He fired up things.
Is kind of shy. He's
wide open. He keeps taking. I don't think he should take any more. Like, I think that's done.
But then that's a problem when Pascal's not. I mean, Pascal can make the three, and he's actually made a few, but. Defense, you know, that he's not spacing the floor, certainly. I don't know. Kerr is going into the game too much thinking I have to get Looney minutes, where to me Looney is a situational, okay, we need him. Okay, Wiseman just is not handling Jokic tonight. Like, he's got to get some time on Jokic, but wait until the game dictates that you have to use Looney, more than like, well, I'm going in and Looney is getting this 6 minute block.
Looney's only taking three threes this year. Feels like more than that. Yeah. Jeez.
He took some in preseason. Remember, there was that one preseason game, him and Marquese Chris, like, I think it was against the Kings. They took like 7 in the first quarter combined.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't hit them. I mean, it's just he doesn't hit the threes. So, like, Wiseman already, I think, has hit as many threes as Looney has in his entire career. And Wiseman, I think, is like 6 of 17.
Wiseman looked pretty good tonight, sir.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, because you caused the mini firestorm today, right? Like nudging out there this.
Yeah, man.
Well, you did.
I guess I did.
I don't know the exact quote. You mentioned something about, you know.
It wasn't anything new. I just basically said the Warriors thought that LaMelo Ball was probably the most talented dude in the draft. And somehow that turned into they picked Wiseman. Because Kerr's system were fit. They made it very clear Wiseman was number one on their board. My point was it wasn't like they missed on LaMelo. It wasn't that like they didn't see, like, yo, it's like, yo, this LaMelo dude is nice. If Wiseman's not there, we're taking him. Also, most talented player, like, you know, I know there were some in the organization who believe that. I don't know that it was universal, but also don't think that means the best pick either.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin. What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan? What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
That's an important distinction you just made right there, where a lot of times when we talk about front offices or organizations or teams or whatever, we say it like it's this one agreeable moving brain that exists in the organization. They think this, you know, universally. No, you know how many different opinions there are in that front office and on that coaching staff and on that team? Like, there are a few people that thought LaMelo was higher. The organization came to very much, I would say,
a universal consensus. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like by the end, it was obvious to them that Wiseman was the pick. But, you know, there are people in there that I would agree would have your opinion before the draft even happened that, hey, you know, LaMelo might have the highest ceiling. There's others who didn't think that. And absolutely, by the way, we are so early into both of these 19-year-olds' careers that I don't know which way it's going. I know some people who think LaMelo is going to be better, some people who think Wiseman is. I think they've pretty much, I mean, we could talk, like, Halliburton will be good in Sacramento. He's already very solid.
Yeah, no question.
He does not have near the ceiling that Wiseman or LaMelo have. But, I mean, at this point, I don't know how Warriors fans could be disappointed with what they've... Like, Wiseman has flaws, which we can discuss, but man, like, you see that Bull dunk he had on Bull Bull tonight, and like, I thought he had a good night.
Nah, Wiseman looked good. You could tell he's getting better. I don't know why anybody is like miffed at him getting schooled by Jokic. Like, this is an all NBA center here. Like, this dude is good. Like, there's not that many people you're putting against Jokic where they're going to have the upper hand. So I feel like all of this stuff is good for him. And he actually played well. He responded. I think he took smart shots. If I wanted anything from Wiseman, I just want him to rebound more. Like, I think he can rebound better.
Rebound and catch.
I think catch might be an offseason thing. Like, he actually caught a ball. Did you see when he caught the lob? He came down with it, but he caught it. It was kind of high, and he came down with it, but then he got stripped. And it was like, I was like, oh, look, he caught that. And I was thinking, oh, there's a good hands play. But then, like, a blink later, it was stripped. And it was very easy to strip.
He brought it down. You shouldn't bring it down. He does some odd things. I mean, you could tell his lack of feel, obviously. They're trying to get him better with catching. They're using weighted balls. I mean, I've talked about this. I talked about that in kind of the bigger feature I did on him. Like, but the thing is, they're trying to help him do that while also, like, throwing 95 other things at his brain, telling him angles on screens, how you're supposed to guard Jokic. I think a lot of the catching, people are like, does he have small hands? No, the guy has enormous hands. There's so much going through his brain, I think. And
the game is definitely not slow for him right now, right? Like, it's not. No. Yeah, it's very fast.
And you wouldn't expect it to. I mean, anyway,
it's crazy that he's doing this with what we're talking about, right? Like, he has the confidence to still go out and get buckets. He's become like a really good, a pretty reliable weak side shot blocker over these last, maybe 6 or 7 games, where at the beginning, like, he couldn't even get to the ball. Like, he's picking this stuff up, and I don't know anybody who's watching him thinking the Warriors might have missed. Like, the dude is good. And if he isn't good,
high floor, high ceiling.
If he isn't good, like, that's the Warriors' fault. It's not him. It's because they couldn't take this clay and mold it into something. And so far, it looks like they are. Like, he just played a nice, what did he play? 29 minutes? What did he play? Like, you just
26 minutes.
26 minutes. And a nice chunk of them was against Jokic. Like, dude, man. That's not nothing to just be able to get out there and force Jokic to be able to make plays. Like, that's not nothing. People are tripping.
He had a very rough end of the homestand. I mean, the Ibaka matchup wasn't good for him. He wasn't great in the Toronto game. Turner and Sabonis kind of gave it to him, and he looked a little bit overwhelmed by the end of the road trip. But he was their best center tonight. He was better than Looney. He was better than Pascal, who was, I think, 2-9 at one point, did not play well. And he was better than Draymond, really. I mean, we can get into Draymond had his worst game of the season, I thought. Wiseman gave him 18 pretty efficient minutes. The jumper is not, early on he was hitting the jumpers, like in the Nets game and stuff. And you're like, maybe he's just hitting it now and it'll leave him. Like, now when he rises up for a 17, like face up 17 footer, you feel pretty like this has a decent chance of going in. You almost want to see him shoot more threes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's unique about it is he's got it. Like, he hit the baseline one today. He's good straight on. He can hit the wings. Like, that's a good sign. If that's not a matter of, like, y'all spent, a bunch of time in the gym getting up thousands of shots to work on a spot, right? And I'm really good at this spot. Like, he can move around and still hit the shot. Like, Oubre is probably best corners and top, right? Like, he got a best chance from the corners and maybe from the top. But, like, we're watching Wiseman hit shots from all over the court, which I think is a good sign. And tonight he's dribbling down court, and he makes a fairly basic pass, but, on a fast break. But it was actually a pretty tricky pass. Yeah, it was a nice pass, right? It was on time. The receiver, to borrow football parlance, right, didn't have to slow up or anything. I should get it. This is where I get off a he threw him open take. Can I use that? Nah.
Go ahead.
But, like, just dribble off the dribble, running, make a pass ahead, make it on time for a fast break. Like, those are legit skills.
Yeah, you vocalized something that I've kind of has been in the back of my mind as we watch him, like, go through these rebounding and catching and traffic issues. It's pretty unique the mix of, we've seen plenty of centers over time. Festus Ezeli is one I know Warriors fans throw out a lot, who struggle to catch the ball.
Yeah.
But the thing is, those guys usually don't then get the ball in the open court, and they're like, remember he had earlier this season, he went behind the back and transitioned to like Shake Lillard. I mean, we've seen the Euro step. Like, it's, he suddenly goes from someone where you're like, man, like the skill might not be there, to like, oh, like the skill is exploding within him.
It's like sometimes his hands are feathery soft and sometimes they're like stone, right? Like, it's like, yeah. how do you do that? Like, it's crazy that he can vacillate, but I think you're right on it. I think that's why what you're saying was right. I think it's more like
the brain.
It's the thinking. Yeah, it's, there's a lot happening in his mind. It's just tough for him to see it.
It's very hard to be, and I probably underrated this coming in, because I think a lot of, you know, some of it was like, look, he'll come in and be JaVale McGee. And like, it's a plug and play. Like, you won't have really many issues. Like, it is so hard to be a center in the NBA. That is the most important defensive position. Now, Draymond Green is a unique guy to play next to, because he can basically be what centers usually are, which is the back line, the anchor, the brains, all that. He has to do a lot more than, like, Wiggins has been awesome for the Warriors defensively, but it's like, hey, you know, guard one-on-one, not like, you know, which pick and roll are they trying? Okay, well, watch out for these speedy guards coming downhill, but also, you know, post-ups, different team rotations. You always got to be talking. He's a quiet kid mostly, somewhat shy, and like, they're trying to get him to talk a lot more. And I just think sometimes the information does seem to be overwhelming him for a guy who I don't think has the most natural feel. That is the biggest difference between him and LaMelo at this age. It's just like, one is just like, basketball is so natural. The other is, has an athletic tool set and a want, you know, and a desire to be great, but is really like learning. He's a lot more behind on just knowing the game.
Yeah.
At a position where it's hard.
In all fairness, LaMelo is a point guard, so he definitely needs what he's showing. Like, that's, if you were going to start with, you know, how good is LaMelo going to be? What tools are we looking for? Like, what intangibles? What's his unique gift? Like, that's it. And that's great. But I don't think that's Wiseman's unique gift. So his unique gift is pretty, is being 7'1" and can shoot and can be a little bit of Giannis. He probably won't ever be Embiid, but you can see it. And look, there's a lot of talk. And one of the reasons the LaMelo thing is being brought up so much is because there's this idea that Wiseman can't really help you now or next year, like, win a championship. Number one, I want to see him with a year under his belt with Klay and Steph on the court. Like, I just think that's a totally different beast, right? Like, that's a different monster when you have Steph and Klay on the court. But also, he's one of the best players to put with Steph. You don't want to waste Steph's year. You don't waste his, what, you don't want to waste 32 for Stephen Curry. You probably need to put him with somebody who can, he can pick and roll with, who can finish with him, who can,
how about that pick,
like,
and roll
draw
they had tonight.
Exactly, right? Like, there aren't that many players they could have gotten their hands on who can take attention off of Steph. And Wiseman does that. I do think that's important. And you can already feel the vibes of, like, how much, you know, Steph feels like it's like something playing with Wiseman. You could just tell. He feels it.
You know what they're not doing with James Wiseman this year? They're not going to win the title. You know what they wouldn't do if they had LaMelo Ball? They're not going to win the title with him. If they traded James Wiseman for Marcus Smart, yet Klay Thompson is still out with an Achilles tear, they're not winning the title either. Like, James Wiseman is so valuable to them, not only potentially for, you know, the future down the line, if they really accelerate his growth process and he's an awesome center by next season when Klay is back, but he, from the moment he got drafted to now, his trade value has gone up. Much higher.
No question. And I do think there are other ways to get what he doesn't have other than giving him up, right? Like, you can, I think there's a way to do both. You can secure the future and have somebody, you know, under lock and key for what, the next 9 years, depending, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you take his rookie contract and then whatever, you know, presuming like a 5-year due after that, you know, you can secure the future while keeping him. And what he can give you, like, when Klay comes back, go get a veteran center. I mean, it's really that simple. You don't have to have, you know, Joel Embiid to win a title. But you, if they had, they could use a veteran center now. Like, wouldn't you replace Looney? Like, if Serge Ibaka says, sure, I'd rather play for the Warriors than the Clippers, right? Like,
they sniffed around on Marcus Gasol and Aaron Baines.
Yeah, Gasol, yeah. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could put Wiseman with a veteran center
next year.
Absolutely. Get a veteran center, you know, and for the things that Wiseman can't do, you got somebody to lean on. You know, and they've had that. They've had the JaVale McGee, the David West, the Zaza Pachulias. So it wouldn't be foreign. And also somebody who can teach him these things, right? Like, that's going to be key. But in the meantime, they're not winning a championship. Like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
So go ahead and let them cook.
It ended in a Los Angeles gym the morning of the draft. It just did. I mean, and we knew it at the time, right? The Klay Thompson injury, all we wrote in the days after were like, well, title's out the window. And the thing is, like, we still have to watch these games and judge it. And I think, you know, Kerr deserves his criticism at times, Steph, for the aggressiveness we've gotten into. I want to have a Draymond Green discussion before we get out of here. But yeah, I mean, look, like, the season, the loftiest goals of this season were just taken away by the Klay Thompson injury. And that's just reality.
I just think it's a little bit wild to be making like categoric commentary off a loss to Denver in Denver.
Like, agree on that. I wanted to, so there's 250 players in the NBA this season have played at least 150 minutes. Draymond Green has played 215 minutes, and he in them has scored 32 points. So that's 32 points spread over 8 games. That's the second lowest in the league.
Who's
among
the
those 250 players? Gary Clark. On the Magic has played 158 minutes and only scored 20 points. TJ McConnell is third fewest. He's played 157 minutes and scored 33, one more than Draymond. Draymond, I believe, had 1 point tonight. I put a clip up, but like, he just straight up passed up a layup.
That was wild. Like, that layup
over Jokic.
He wasn't even there. Like,
not only is Nikola Jokic not a rim protector, Draymond Green has literally had TNT segments where he's broken down how much Jokic isn't. So I understand, like, his value to this team. He showed it during the home. He didn't score during the homestand really at all, and he was awesome. What he did to them defensively, what he does on offensive, you know, organizing everything, but his offensive decline from a score standpoint is really even worse than it's ever been right now. I mean, he is just not scoring, and that's gonna be a problem. I mean, it was a problem tonight. I mean, it's one of the main reasons they lost, and we can get into it. Like, he had a really bad defensive night too, but I think wider scope, the offense is kind of a concern.
I mean, he had a game. I forgot who was against, but I think he had like 10, 10, 9. He almost had like a double, triple double. And it's like, that's like, they need him. They need that 10.
Explosion for him. Yeah.
They need that 10. I think more important is him getting the shots up, right? But somebody pointed out on social media that, you know, Denver might have been especially tough for his conditioning. Like, I'm not sure. I know we got to be a little bit, you know, dance around the topic, but.
Well, he was in isolation. We know he was in isolation quarantine. Take it however you want basically all of training camp. Then had a foot thing. I agree.
So I didn't even think about that live. He took a mid-range jumper, and he kind of looked like he just didn't have the legs to shoot it, and he didn't make it. And I think he just stopped. I think he just decided, my offense ain't there tonight. He missed 3 free throws. That layup you showed, he didn't even look at the rim, and he had a wide open layup. And then the last game, he ended by, you know, getting hung on that dunk. So I think there's something like confidence wise where he's like, I'm not really clicking with my offense, because he only like 2 shots in it, like 2 for 7, 3 for 8. It's like, all right. But take the shots. Like, take the shots that will get you the 10. That's how you get the 10. Tonight, he just really wasn't aggressive at all. I still think he can be not, like, dominant offense, but a factor. I know he wants to, like, rack up the assists and be the flow. Like, that's what he sees his contribution is. But I do think he's got more to give on offense. And I think tonight was just a couple of opportunities, and then he just shut it down, right? But like, he makes that layup. He takes that little, I don't know why they hate this shot so much. You see all the good scorers take it. That little 12 foot, you get by your man, dotted line area, just pull up and take that. Right? Like, it's there all day. It's wide open. If he just hits two of those and get out in transition, like, I think he can be that. He just got to have the confidence to do it. But I think the Denver altitude got him. And also, I mean, don't you think, like, I figured he'd be up for Jokic because of the TNT segments, right? I thought he'd be like, all right, I talked to all this mess. I got to shut him down. And he just didn't. He did not look like that player tonight, right? He just didn't.
The idea of the game I expected was Jokic to kind of give it to Wiseman, probably get Wiseman in early foul trouble. And I, somewhat similar to the Indiana game, the way he took the Sabonis matchup a few times, stripped Sabonis, was kind of roaring a little bit defensively. Yeah. I thought he was going to try to do that to Jokic. Now, Jokic is a tougher matchup than Sabonis, but do you even remember him guarding?
I don't think so.
Jokic once tonight? I mean,
there was a couple times he helped over, but he wasn't that much of a help. Like, I don't think he was on.
And the film, his defensive film tonight is bad. He was getting back cut behind him and being like, oh whoops. You know, it was like, he had a bad defensive night. He didn't
took
just have
a
like
couple of like fast break touch fouls, like stopping the break. That was weird.
You don't worry about it. Like, the only thing you worry about tonight, I mean, the offensive discussion, which we've already had, and then this idea that how much gas does he have in the tank? You know, how many that second Portland game where Steph had the 62 points and Draymond was everywhere defensively, you just wonder with these guys, like, how many, though, not that Steph needs 62, but how many just full throttle offensive games does Steph have in his tank this year, and how many of those defensive games does Draymond have? Because as we saw tonight, they're just a much easier team to beat when Draymond Green looks like last season's version, not 2, 3, 4 years ago version.
The layup drill that Denver had in the first half was insane. Like, they were just, everything was to the bucket. It was like, yo, and Draymond was on the court. That was weird about it. They don't have they do have a chance. They had a chance tonight, but generally speaking, they don't have a chance if Draymond's not giving them something. And tonight, he didn't give them very much. I know he had 7 assists, but he didn't give them enough
to win. He was low energy,
and
you know what happens when he's low energy? Everybody else is,
yeah. Everybody else is.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Denver altitude.
Yeah, probably.
That makes a lot of sense, like, afterwards, like, watching them play, like, yeah, okay. Which means that's something to pay attention to, right? Like, the rest of the way.
I kind of wish that they were being tested in Phoenix tomorrow night on the back end of a back-to-back against a tough Phoenix team. I would have liked to see how they would have responded. Instead, they're going to get Friday off, Saturday off, and Sunday off. Leading into a matchup
with the
Lakers.
When do they go to
LA? They're going to LA on Sunday after practice. They're coming back to the Bay Area, taking Friday off, practice Saturday, practice Sunday, leave Sunday afternoon for LA. You can't do much in LA.
I was thinking,
man,
can you do something? LA kind of, LA is shut down or what? I know the numbers are high.
Number one, LA is shut down. And number two, sure, you can do something, but then half your team might be ineligible to play because they're in health and safety protocols.
Right, yeah.
So, you probably don't want to do anything. So, the Lakers are the best team in the NBA right now. And they'll, I'm sure, be up for the MLK showcase game, but the Warriors having three off days to lead them into that, I'm curious how they come out, right? I mean, even if they lose that game, as we've seen with the Bucks-Nets game compared to even this Denver game, like, how they lose will be interesting.
If they're in the game with 3 minutes left, like, that's a victory. And the showcase, they can't, what you don't want to see is them lose by 30 in the showcase game again. Like, that's what you don't want to see. Like, just be in the game. That's just kind of up to Steph, though. But be in the game. If Steph is playing well, they'll probably be in striking distance, right? Like a puncher's chance.
I'm curious about Wiseman against the Davis Gasol.
This is it right here, right? This is gonna be it. This is what we go. Yeah. This is worth the price of admission right here. How does he look? Does he get completely owned, or does young fella show you a little something? With 3 days to prep, that's gonna be a tough one. Nah, it'd be like that Spider-Man.
It's a good MLK slate of games for the NBA. Capped off, it's a night game. So, Marcus, thank you for coming on, and we will talk to you again post game Lakers Warriors. That should be a good one.
All right, calm down, Warriors fans. It'll be all right.